Good evening. This is July 22nd, 2014, and we are having the July Organic Law Student Teleconference Call. And this month, Dr. Rivera has called Organic Laws Month because we actually have two organic laws this month. And it's interesting that they are both the first organic laws, which by written law standard essentially are the first laws of two unions. So with that, I'll let you continue.
Okay, the thing that's the most important about the Northwest Ordinance is that it has to be fitted in with the other three organic laws. And you do this by ferreting out the key words. And the main key word in the Northwest Ordinance is temporary government. It's setting up a temporary government. And so what we have in the organic laws, we have a complete system of written law that is basic and foundational to the law that is going to be made by the Congress, the one that's mentioned in Article 1, Section 1. And that's established by the states. So in essence, you have a reestablishment of the United States and Congress assembled as a Congress of the United States. But what you're going to look for is the completion of the temporary government, and that completion is found in the Constitution. So it's a completion not of the first government that was established under the Articles. You don't have a confederation that was temporary. That was permanent. It was not only permanent, but perpetual. So it allows you, the language that's in the, that's contained in the organic laws allows you to remember these key words, perpetual, permanent, temporary, government, and you can locate the words that couple to make sense of the whole thing in each of the laws, so that none of them can stand alone. If you look at the Declaration of Independence, it has to be interpreted by the Articles of Incorporation of Confederation. In such a way that it completes what the Declaration started, which is the independence from Great Britain. So if you have independence from Great Britain, you have to have a means by which you're going to maintain that independence from this former superpower. And so that was the Confederation. And the Confederation proved its mettle by defeating the superpower of the time, the Great Britain. So that's one of the things that you're going to have to do to understand the purpose and the use of the organic laws is to get a foundation of what the Congress is going to do. It's really just going to set out making laws for a temporary government that's going to be permanent in the future. And then once it's permanent, then where is it going to go? So the development of the second union has been arrested because it keeps going and it really has really no real function, and it is evident in what happens today with the malfunctioning of government. It really has no purpose, no goal in its existence.
Okay,
so,
we're going to have to.
That accounts for why the major problems that we have today have no solution. Is because this organic law is really a preparation for the freedom of the people. That's what the Articles of Confederation were, to enable the free inhabitants to be free.
Okay. We're going to we might back up a little bit because I think you might have confused someone. First, so one of the things I think that is hard to appreciate is the importance of sticking to the written law, and that law cannot be law. And as from a written law standpoint, or even a government for that matter, cannot be exist as a government unless there is written law that brings it into being. Is that correct?
Well, the written law limits the government. It's like anything that's written. Whatever is written is limiting the thought processes that go through the understanding of what's written. So if you write something, those words are going to have definite meanings, and when they're combined with other words, combined into full sentences that complete thoughts, then you're stuck with a meaning. And that's what happens with the organic laws. You're stuck with a meaning that establishes a temporary government that's going to be made semi-permanent, and then when it's permanent, all it means is it's a permanent temporary government, which is what we have, which is why we have problems that I have.
Now, a term that most people probably never heard in school, which probably is important to understand, is territorial government. Is that correct? Because like what the Northwest Ordinance, or even from that, the April 23rd resolution created was a territorial state, essentially.
Well, the territory is the essential part of a state, an entity that is considered a nation state is one that has territory. You can't have people in homes carrying out businesses without having a territory.
Say that again, please.
Well, territory is essential to the existence of a state. You can't have
people
in territory.
Okay. And you said you can't have people in what?
You can't have people in a place, which is their territory, which is where they live, because people are territorial. They, even though they may be nomadic, they're moving from one place to another place. So territory is essential to the existence of mankind. They find their sustenance from the territory. In fact, that's how the society was built. It started with the hunter-gatherer, and then an agrarian agricultural society, and then to a more complex industrial society. But it's all built on land, on territory. That's the essential.
Now, go ahead.
That's the essential part of all that history, is that there is a territory that supplies the food and the place for the activity. So that's why all these laws go back to a territory. You have to, if you're writing a law, it has to apply to something. And the invention of free people that weren't bound by laws, written laws, requires those people to have a territory. So all that the organic does is organic laws do is define the separate territories of the government and of the people.
So how does the organic laws define the territory of a free people?
Well, it doesn't define it, because all it really does is define the territory of the government. In the Articles of Confederation, there is no territory. The territory belongs to the people. And so what you track through the organic law is the creation of a territory that becomes the territory belonging to the government. So we know that the basis of the government's power over land is proprietary ownership. It owns the land because the people set up the government in order to protect the people. The land that was claimed by the states and claimed by Great Britain was not populated by the population of the that was formerly under the governance of the king. So that became government land. And so government says, we can control the land because we control the land, or government control the land under the king. Well, that was a different proposition for the king, because the king had a domain. He had a kingdom. You right. couldn't have that kind of government without a kingdom, without the domain, without the fiefdoms and the heraldry and all the trappings of nobility, which was the whole idea of ownership of the whole by one person, in the sense that he owned it in order for him to protect it. So that is lost when the Declaration of Independence takes effect with the winning of the American Revolution.
So now you recently, is it recently that you discovered the, or actually got a copy of the April 23rd, 1784?
No, is that 1784? Yeah, well, no, I had had that. What I did was the first thing I did was to get a copy of all the organic laws. This is where I got my education, was a detention center in Los Angeles. when I was found in contempt of court for espousing these ideas. And so I took the opportunity to just dwell on that, to study these things so I could understand, because apparently no one has ever done it before. They look at the Declaration of Independence and the most common parts of it, the two paragraphs, you know, but in the course of human events. But they don't connect it to the rest of the organic laws. And when you do, you discover that what was done was a deception of the people. By claiming that the Constitution replaced the Articles of Confederation, and they completely ignore the Northwest Ordinance, which is very important because it brings together all the other documents. Because if you wonder, well, there's all this talk about the substitution, the replacement, the supersession of the Articles of Confederation by the Constitution, but there's no one has ever claimed that the Northwest Ordinance was replaced by anything or superseded by anything. They don't mention it at all, and so it's important to look at the organic laws as four fundamental laws that explain all the laws we have today, especially the Affordable Health Care Act. And every other thing that we have a problem with can be resolved by placing it in its proper place, which is the United States, which is the territory that's owned by the United States of America.
Right. Yeah, one of the questions that I get via email often, actually, is why should I study the organic laws? What am I going to use this for? How is it going to help me? And I might throw in at this point, it's said that 2014 is the year of integrity, and all of our structures have to come into integrity. And without knowing the organic laws, it's how can we bring it back to integrity?
It's impossible to understand the written law today without understanding the organic law. Like, all you have to do is study those words, organic law. And when you come to appreciate the logic in calling something organic law, And you finally realize this is basic law. This tells you where the law is the law. It tells you how the law became the law. Why this is the organic law. All this little history within a dozen years tells you everything you need to know about where the law is the law today.
All right. Now, one of the things that I've heard you caution about is relying on definitions. Like, say, for example, you know, when you what's difficult in this whole thing is when you try to study this to try to understand it, since it really is a proprietary government, not really anything that we would term as usual government, whether it's a federation or a confederation, speaking of the United States, you know, does it, like, become like an amalgamation of all of it in a way? Like, it's a federal, you know, because in a federation, the government has control or can command the citizen. First, in a confederation, the government cannot command.
Well, that's what they want. Right? I think they want to pervert the idea of federal, which comes from confederation. I mean, federal, which actually means that the government owns something. Well, it does own the land. So the definition for federal is this control, this unitary type of government where everything is controlled by one government, or a selected subjects are controlled by one government or one head.
I don't have it in front of me, but I'm sure you probably remember it. It's interesting in that April 23rd resolution, how in towards the end it talks about the president being the executive president of the Congress. So it really helps you see why, oh my gosh, that's the legislative position of the president of the United States. I mean, were they defining it right there?
Well, not only were they defining it, but they were just admitting it, because that was the kind of government that they had. They only had a Congress that could make laws for its own territory and its own administration of that territory. So that was definite. That was all it could do is make laws for what it owned, because it wasn't controlling the chamber. The chamber was controlling its employees, and one of the employees was the president.
Yeah.
So he was one of the higher ups. So the higher you go, the more prestige you have, but you still remain an employee in government. So the president of the United States is still an employee. He's an employee of the United States of America, because the organic laws haven't changed anything. What has changed is people interpret them incorrectly.
Yeah. And the main interpretation incorrectly from the beginning was for personal gain, essentially.
Well, when you leave most of them out, then or you eliminate most of them, it's hard to interpret them properly.
Right. Yeah. Sure. So do you see any significance or any in regards to federal debt being first mentioned in that April 23rd resolution?
Oh, absolutely, because everything that's concerned with the Northwest Territory is in the Northwest Ordinance has to do with the Northwest Territory. That's the temporary government. There is no other government, and there is no other territory that except for the territory that's mentioned in the April 23rd resolution, where it's the land that they get from England, from Great Britain, in the Treaty of Paris, what land was ceded by the states to the United States of America, and the land that they claim was purchased from the Indians. That's it. That's all the territory.
But they also left that they could have future land purchased. I mean, it was like kind of wide open too, wasn't it?
Well, they would take title in the name of the United States of America, which is a legal entity. There's no legal entity created by the Constitution. Legal in the sense that it's primary. The United States of America is primary. That's why when people are charged with crimes, the injured party is the United States of America. So it's United States of America versus John Doe.
So the United States really isn't an entity in in that sense, or a primary entity.
Well, the United States is just an abbreviation or a catchword for the United States of America or United States, meaning the territory belonging to the United States of America. It depends on the context of the phrase.
All right. And so as far as the Northwest Ordinance goes, the United States stands for the territory belonging. It's the government for
yeah,
the
Yeah, you get that from
belonging
from Article 4 that says, well, all that territory, meaning the three classes of territory that is now owned by the United States of America, is made an inseparable part of the Confederacy. And it's going to be
there
forever.
That's what that line means, an inseparable part of the Confederacy means, of course, because the Confederacy is the United States of America.
Yeah, it's going to belong to the United States. Even when it's not, it's going to belong to the part of the Confederacy that is independent, where the states are independent, free, and sovereign. And so are the people if they're free inhabitants.
Sorry, say that again. I didn't hear that.
The Article 4 says that the territory that being discussed in the Northwest Ordinance is forever going to be a part of the Confederacy. So there's two confederacies. There's the confederacy that is the direct that is an owner of land, and there's the confederacy under the Articles of Confederation that is there to carry out all the articles of the Articles of Confederation. The confederacy, in the sense of a government of states, that is there just to carry out those specific purposes that are all found in the Articles of Confederation.
So you're essentially saying it's like a noun and a verb?
Yeah, it serves two purposes. It serves the two meanings of, so that they shift in their progression from being land owned by the United States of America to being a combination of land owned by the United States of America and land owned by the free people. They don't want to call them free people because that would let the cat out of the bag and everybody would be free. So they create the idea that if you're a citizen, then you've thrown your lot in with the government. And of course, since you're in control of whether you're a citizen or not, because you just if you do too many things to become a citizen, if you vote and pay taxes and become members of juries, then, of course, you've made your decision to become a citizen. And it's going to be hard to weasel out of that. But if you're consistent and treat yourself as a free inhabitant and behave like a free inhabitant, then you're going to be a free inhabitant, even if you partake of some of the benefits. If you are clearly a free inhabitant in the sense that you are not a U.S. citizen by knowing the law and declaring the law, propounding the law.
Well, I think that's a good place to open up for question and answer. Do you?
Yep.
You ready? All right. Okay. I'm going to put us in the question and answer mode, and to ask a question, all you need to do is press star 6. Okay. So to get in the queue to ask a question, star 6, please. And so, here we go. Area code 619, you're unmuted.
Thank you very much. Another fantastic presentation, Ed. Absolutely all grateful. Taking notes as fast as I can, which brings me to my question. Is the presentation transcribable, or can we consider having the presentations transcribed?
If someone would like to volunteer to do this,
Oh yeah, that's always possible. Somebody can volunteer to transcribe it.
we do have the option of Google transcriptions. If we run this through a Google platform, then that's
yes, you can download. Once I upload the recording, you can download it.
Yeah, I didn't. This is just extemporaneous. My computer is on the fritz. I think it's going to be in the shop tomorrow.
Who am I speaking to? Is that Ed?
What's that?
Is that you?
Yeah.
Ed speaking? Okay. Area code 619, did we lose you?
No, just standing by.
Okay. Go ahead.
If we work with the recording that's been uploaded and we can download it, then does anybody in our group know how we can run, an individual can run that through Google or whatever for transcription?
I'll find out about it, but it's not on my priority list at the moment. I'm getting ready to do another upgrade, but I will see about asking it, adding that, but I will say that if I do that, I won't be able to check it for, compare it against the audio. Yeah, and that's the problem as far as doing automatic transcription. You know, how accurate will it be? So I don't know about us offering that.
Right.
But, you know,
well, you can submit it, and if anything is wrong, I could correct that. But otherwise,
okay.
The
that would be great, then, if you're willing to do that.
More or less on
the
point.
Well, that would be great if you're willing to do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't talk that.
And who is the caller that's speaking so I know? You email me?
And this is Chef.
Chef?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Chef Jim.
Well, thanks.
Chef Jim is
sure. Okay, great.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for your suggestion. Okay, bye-bye. All right, we are going to area code. It looks like 727.
Yes.
Great. Hello, welcome.
Okay. Thank you. I really don't know where to start. You know, I am participating in the lessons. I think I just completed my third, or at least read through it, and it's starting to make sense. Even before I started the lessons, I understood that just about, all federal employees are just employees. They are not officers with civil commissions and official bonds. They're just mere employees, and they sign a Form 61. If you've never seen a Form 61, I think it has the oath that it is talked about under the legislative Article 1, and they sign it, and it's a form. And it basically they're just employees, including the
everybody's an employee. Yeah.
The justices of the Supreme Court, everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we find ourselves, thinking that we have a republic in which we really don't, in terms of a constitutional republic government.
Well, enough people think that we do, so that
right.
If you build it, people will come, and they built it in that sense. It's put on a foundation of sand, but it's a democracy.
And so, okay, so for those people like us who want to assert our political status in a proper way, last conversation that you had, I mentioned that I got a passport, even though they demanded that I send them, at least 8-10 pages of personal information before I get a passport. And I ignored that, and I basically stated my political status, And then I asked them, I said, if you believe that, you know, point one, point two, that I'm this, a federal citizen, or, you know, I work for the federal government, or I live on federal territory. And I went through this list and I said, you know, if you believe that, then please state it in writing and send it to me so I can, you know, I can respond to this. And then I also asked for the civil commission of the Secretary of State. And I, in the footnotes, I explained to them what I was talking about with a civil commission for an officer. And so, I mean, okay, so I ignored their letter, their response. And obviously, it was just a form letter, but it was addressing, you know, what I did on my passport. And, but in a week, I got a passport. I mean, I just ignored everything, you know, so we got this government who's telling us to be, you know, concerned about all this terrorism, and we're always under attack, and there's a terrorism in the back of your trunk, and our terrorists in the back of your trunk, you know, and they want all this information on you, and they just didn't, you know, I just answered differently, and I just got a passport.
Well, that's because you're entitled to one.
Yes. Well, yeah, I look back at passports, and I mean, there was a point in time when passports weren't even required. I think passports were a part of a wartime thing where you couldn't travel in countries that were hostile to the United States.
Well, it's a convention. Other countries want you to identify people into their country because they're afraid of terror.
I guess the question is this, you know, and I did mention in this passport response is, you know, I did mention the organic laws. My political status, and I got that from you, but I didn't, you know, I wasn't well versed in, but I did look up the United States Statutes at Large, Volume 1, where they were clearly stated, which I thought was, well, I said, that's kind of neat, you know, we got these four organic laws that nobody ever talks about. So my question is this, you know, in pursuing the information that you're providing, for students is how can we further assert ourselves as free inhabitants, more so
than
what
I don't want you to assert yourselves before you have enough knowledge to back up what you assert.
Well, let's just say we're down at the end of the lesson 12 or whatever it is. Okay. I mean, what is the objective? I mean, we have to understand. I mean, okay, if we understand how the current government was formed and the wool was pulled over our eyes, then we are, you know, now that we are learned students of your program, and I would state to everybody to continue to learn with other people's information that you can rely on, but in your words, so once we finish and complete this, what is the objective? I mean, how are we going to deal with the driver's license and
free.
You know, the agencies, et cetera?
You want to live free.
Okay. I mean,
other way is there to live?
Okay. Well, you're going up against a world of agencies that are saying,
well, that's where you use this information, this knowledge is supposed to be used. And what you learn to do with your mind is manipulate it so that you can state a fact so clearly that it devastates your opponent. It's like kung fu. One good blow and the guy is on his knees.
Well, okay, so
that's where you're headed, and so.
Well, give me an example. So, for instance, do you travel with a driver's license?
Oh, yeah, I always have my driver's license with me because I don't want trouble.
Okay, all right.
I make enough trouble as it is without having a. I used to drive.
Okay,
so I could just drive as well with or without it. So.
I agree.
It's not necessary for travel.
But if you're seized on the roadside, you and your property, you know, do you just wait till you go into an administrative hearing to state your case, or do you present?
It's your choice. You're free to do whatever you want to do. I get a license because I get a license to drive on their roads. Whatever road
those are roads.
Without having to check it. Now, most of the residential streets are not owned by the government. They're owned by the adjoining landowners.
Okay. Well, I guess the other the argument also would be that they own our cars because they have the manufacturer's original title.
Well, they're registered in
the MSO.
They are. No, I don't think that has anything to do with it.
Well,
if you register
okay,
the
so,
car, in, it's going to be operated in the state of. And if California, for example, has a form that says that you're not going to operate it in the state of California. Now, I figure that's very useful. If somebody doesn't want to register their car because they're not going to drive in the state of California, that's exactly the form you use to establish that you don't need the license number or license plate.
You're going to tell that to the heavily armed mercenary
that's right. So it's a matter of education. But as soon as we reach the tipping point where our education far surpasses theirs, which is right now.
Okay.
Well, I don't think you could find... Ask your senator to explain why Constitution replaced the Articles of Confederation. I think we had that in the newsletter.
I saw that.
Yeah, they have no idea what they're talking about. They don't read. They don't read the most basic laws. How are they going to read the complicated ones?
Well,
but they don't have to read the complicated ones because they're all limited to the United States.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just think there's, like I said, it's good to know your stuff, and I'm getting a lot out of it. You do repeat it a lot, and you're trying to wrap your mind around how in the heck did they do this to us back all the way back to when, George Washington and his cronies got involved. And
well,
then it's been
the
perpetuated.
If it hadn't been for George Washington, we wouldn't be in the pickle we're in. Because people trust
him. Is that a coincidence he's a Freemason? I mean, you would think. But, trying to wrap your mind around, we hit on points where I go, yeah, that's right. We're really under legislative rule.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Precisely.
Yeah. Yeah, because there are no
But it's gotten away from them, hasn't it? Because look what Obama's doing. He's just messing everything up. He's proven the end of the presidency. The presidency was always a dictatorship Congress tried to control. So they can't control it now.
Well,
because
it was never an accurate,
correct system.
If he works for Congress... And Congress is basically out of the picture.
Congress is limited to making laws for what the United States of America owns.
Right. And so if the president works for Congress under the administrative state, he's operating with impunity. He's acting with impunity at this point.
Well, he's lording it over the rest of us.
Huh?
He's not limited by his contract to preserve,
right.
protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, which is federal territory.
So there's a reason why Congress is not, bringing this guy in.
They don't know how. They've lost control.
Okay.
Well, look, I explain in the lessons how easy it should be to impeach a president of the United States. It tells the Constitution says it is, because all you have to do is wake up the Chief Justice and put him in charge of presiding over the impeachment of the president of the United States. That's all it takes. That's the only condition.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll let somebody else. I did want to read just one small thing in this footnote that I, in my passport regarding civil commissions, and it was from a United States Supreme Court case. I have to find it in a second.
Well,
but
remember, there used to be real officers,
right?
But they were limited to operating within the United States. the collector of Internal Revenue was one of those officers who had to have a bond for what
right.
he collected.
Right.
So he was limited to operating in the district, which was the federal territory within another body of land.
Yeah, and so now, and there is no real commissioner of Internal Revenue now, is there?
Well, the commissioner just is the superintendent of the operation. He has no authority to do anything,
right?
Except to superintend.
Right. He's not an actual officer.
He's an officer in the sense that he's an
employee
by the president, confirmed by the Senate.
Right.
Because that's what anoints the employee as an officer.
Right.
So it's
well,
a special employee who's been anointed by being confirmed by the Senate.
Well, you would say that's de facto, wouldn't you?
It's not de facto. It's real.
Okay. I just thought that everybody was an employee. They're not.
You're correct in that. Everybody is an employee, but there are employees at a higher level, which are the officers. Because
okay,
they're employees there who have been confirmed by the Senate.
Right. Are they bona fide officers? They met all the elements of being an officer.
Yeah, they're officers because they're in charge of other employees, but they're still employees of the United States of America.
But they don't have a civil commission.
Well, some of them do. Some of the... Anybody that's confirmed by the Senate is a officer of the United States, which is the officer of the United States of America, which is an employee of the United States of America. They're all employees. You got it right.
Right. Okay. I'll let somebody else ask a question.
Okay. *6 to unmute yourself if you'd like to ask a question. *6. So, now the Northwest Ordinance really is like so key to understand because it really is the beginning of all of this, correct?
It's the beginning of the welfare state.
yeah, there we go. Right. Okay, area code 805, you're unmuted.
Okay, this is Joel. Ed, how are you doing today?
Hey, Joel.
I am listening with interest and, you know, reflecting also as I listen about the environment that exists. It's a cultural environment. A political state has been erected, and a lot of people have enrolled into it, citizens of the United States, and they know very little about what you're talking about. So to them, it's of the highest duty to sign up the juror and don't read the law, but only deal with the facts of the case and then sustain this whole system. But that's at one level. If that's assuming that somebody even has the opportunity to have a jury, a so-called jury trial, because most of these cases where the rubber hits the road and the enforcement of these legislative laws is coming about are handled just by a bench hearing where the judge takes it upon himself to make the ruling of the law. And the individual that's there as a defendant is faced with, plaintiffs that are simply turning the law the way that is convenient for them to make it appear either through case law or through their own manipulations and wording in the case that the defendant has no basis, no standing, no meritorious claim.
Okay, state what your question is, please?
Well, it's necessary to have an understanding of the way the system operates, if one is...
I think everybody has an understanding. I mean,
Well, one of the ways that it operates is by requiring everybody to be represented by counsel. And as soon as you're represented by counsel, you may as well throw up your hands and surrender. because that puts you within their territory. So what people have to understand is that when you are asking the court to allow you to represent yourself, you're putting yourself in the territory that is being managed and administered by the United States of America. That's the process. That's how it works. If you are yourself, then you're not in their system. So you have to put yourself in their system by saying I want to represent myself. So there's no logic in that designation of being your representative of yourself.
Right.
It just explains why the system is the way it is. It's because it's foreign to reality, and it's a creature of written word. It's a story.
Right.
And until people realize how fantasy is created, well,
that's a good one.
That's the gist of it. They created a fantasy. The United States is a made up place.
So
what you do is you start taking it apart little bit by little bit, and explaining it to everybody that you can. You see, I'm the lone voice in the wilderness, and so what I'm trying to do with the educational system is to teach people how to teach other people how to understand the simplest things.
Mm-hmm.
How to understand the written word. The written word is not real. It's a thought.
And see, the thing that I think most people have a challenge with is, you know, you're dealing with other people, and human nature, one wants to control another. And when people feel powerless because they have the wrong information, and we were born into a fantasy that there's someone with authority. When you know the law, then you know what's true and what's not true. So, you know, that's why, you know, when people ask, well, what kind of results are you going to get, that's going to be different from everybody. I mean, listen to the guy who just talked about how he got his passport by just, you know, stating facts. And then, but yet in another area of his life, he's saying, well, what's going to happen? You know, you know, it's the same thing in another area. If he had that same confidence and understanding, you know, who can challenge the truth? Essentially, people can ignore the truth. They can, you know, I mean, you can go any scenario.
Well, stating the facts is certainly the only avenue that we have when we're facing challenges from the system or the authority, because they would assert laws and try to assert their own claim.
Well, what I'm trying to teach is how to do it early enough so that you don't end up in front of a magistrate or judge. So that you're out of the system. And once you learn that, then the key to that is just the distribution of that information. That's all we're trying to do, is trying to get this information to a simplicity that is easily communicated to others. Once that's done, it's the truth. The truth has finally emerged because we people know what the truth is. Right now, people think, oh, the law is what Congress does or doesn't do. And they swear by that without knowing anything. All they know is that that's what they heard. So if you can present a full picture of how it really works and demonstrate it through history and through a few references to the organic laws, you can compel others to accept the truth.
Well, the others that are not government paid employees, yes, but
even people who are employees, you can use their law against them. Trying to help people get off property assessment rules, and you will get results if you finally have to accuse the officers of malfeasance in office or corruption in office. because they'll come a point where they cannot admit that they have no authority. And at that point, they have committed malpractice, or as it's known in the criminal law, malfeasance, because they're doing something they have really no authority to do. To put you on the list or to claim that you owe money. All it takes is people to understand a tax is just a tax. It's not a debt. Debt is what you want to have to pay. A tax is just so something that somebody calculates as what you owe. It's pay what you owe. Pay your fair share. It's not a debt. That's what the collector of internal revenue used to do, is determine that you had a debt. Then he went after you with hook and tongs to get paid. But that was the power of that officer, is that, and then that power was limited to United States territory.
Mm-hmm.
But at least it was apparent that he had the law on his side, because you carried yourself as a United States citizen, and you filled out a return and said you owed money. You created the debt. If you didn't create the debt, then that collector had the power to declare that debt for you. But that officer is gone, so that everybody can do that. Everybody can declare the debt. And that's all that happens. It's very simple. The tax becomes a debt when you put it on the 1040 form and say, I owe you this much money, government. You have consented. Now getting to that idea is the subject of this education, where we teach you that written laws are made by Congress, and that Congress has the power to collect the tax by appointing an officer who says you owe the money, and then Harry Truman in 1952 does away with the Office of Collector of Internal Revenue, and there's no more tax. There's no more tax to create a debt. It's all debt now, because you figure out that you owe a debt. You skip the tax part, now you owe a debt. But your thoughts are still with the idea that there is a tax.
Well, the time to catch someone's understanding is before they file a first 1040. I know you say that the 1998 tax...
Oh, I can hardly hear you.
I think you've said that the 1998 revision of the tax code... There are provisions where it requires 2 years of filing in sequence to become named as a taxpayer.
Yeah, it's administrative. If you call yourself a taxpayer, we're going to accept you as part of the herd.
What is that provision again? Do you recall what that is?
6651, and it's in the notes. They won't put give it a section number, and so that they're blatant about it. They'll just put it in the notes. But everything in that book is the law.
Notes, and what is the section again? Or the
6651.
6651.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
All right.
So yeah, if enough people come to an understanding of this and form their own communities, then I think there's movement, and there's
all they have to do is form one community, and the rest of them will catch
on. Themselves.
It's not difficult. It's just a matter of chance.
Okay. All right. Anyone else have a question? We're approaching 9 o'clock. Press *6 to unmute yourself. *6 if you have a question. Anyone? Okay. Is there, the hardest part, I think, is to appreciate, just a second. Here we go. Area code 702.
Dr. Barrett, it's Lance. How are you doing?
Hi, Lance.
Hey, I got a question for you. I wanted to follow up a couple of callers ago now regarding these officers that were appointed by the president with the advice and consent of the Senate. Now, that was the collector of internal revenue and the assessors, correct?
So there was who stood in for the collector.
Mm-hmm. Now, those offices have been abolished.
Abolished, yeah.
Okay, so nobody is being appointed to that position now?
No.
Through that process? Correct?
That's correct. That's why they say that taxes are voluntary, because it wasn't voluntary under the collector.
Mm-hmm. Including the property tax, state property tax.
Or, well, the property tax is
county property tax
owned by the local, the county level, the city level.
Uh-huh.
And the I don't even think the state claims authority to do it, except they say that all what they do is they make a pronouncement in all the constitutions. All property is taxable, that property which is exempt. Well, that's a correct statement, because the state constitution only applies on federal territory, because they're all
uh-huh.
subdivisions of the United States of America, which is the federal territory in the United States of America.
In fact, actually, as far as I read in Arizona, it says all property in this state.
In the state means in the state of
in
Arizona.
In the federal territory, Okay. Okay, well, that was it. I didn't want to tell you too much tonight. I'll be following up on you with some of this stuff anyway, because I want to work on this some of these property tax deals.
Well, that's the most fun, because essentially what you're going to do is just say to whoever's sending you the bill, take me off your list. I don't want to pay taxes anymore.
Well, I know what the other question I had was. Now, that when they send you that notice, it's just kind of like getting a postcard in the mail. It's not an official statement.
It's
not signed.
That they want you to declare that this tax is a debt that you owe this
person. Now, isn't that form supposed to be signed?
You start making your inquiries in their law by finding out, well, who can turn a tax into a debt? Who can say that I owe this money, or that the property owes the money? That was a possibility, how you can make property owe money.
Now, somewhere in this process, I've heard that form is supposed to be signed. Is that correct, or have you heard that?
Well, it's supposed to, if you're going to make a statement that you have the authority to turn a tax into a debt, you should identify yourself as the office holder who has that authority, and then you should be able to find that office in the state laws or in the county laws, ordinances, city ordinances, that person has the authority to create a debt from a tax, declare that a tax is a debt.
And via their signature would
you just identify them as the person
would identify that authority.
Yeah, that's why none of them will identify themselves as the person who has the authority to tell you that you have a debt, which is the critical thing. If you don't, you can owe all the taxes in the world, but not have any debts, because no one can make you pay the tax.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, that answers my questions this evening.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Bye. You're welcome.
You know, in a way, it's pretty amazing that we pay all these taxes and never even ask, you know, who has the authority to do that, especially in property taxes. That's really amazing.
Well, sales taxes are the easiest, because if you don't pay the sales tax, you don't get the goods. But the tax is on the retailer. It's not on the buyer, except places like California who think they've been cheated because someone goes buys out-of-state products that would be taxed in the state of California. But in the state of California is another place altogether.
Wow. Okay, well, one more question. If you have a question, star 6, jump in there, and we'll take one more for tonight. So if anybody wants to jump in, here's your opportunity. Okay. Okay. So, is there anything like to round out knowledge that people have of the Northwest Ordinance and its importance and the temporary government that was established and how that temporary government is made? What does the Constitution make the temporary government? What would be the correct terminology?
That's this union. That creates this union in this Constitution. So the way you remember that creation is this. This Constitution creates this union as opposed to the union and the Constitution.
Wow. Okay.
Which is the Articles of Confederation.
In the Articles of Confederation, does it actually say the union?
Well, it says the perpetual union.
Oh, okay. It does.
You can't get it much better than the union than perpetual,
right.
The one perpetual union.
Wow. So,
but the thing to do is to read both the resolution of April 23rd, 1784, and the Northwest Ordinance.
Dr. Vera, am I still on?
Yeah, I have unmuted you if you want to ask a question.
Yeah, I did want to ask him, do you have a copy of that earlier ordinance available?
It's on the website.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, under resources. And the last newsletter that went out, there was a link in it also for that.
Okay.
Yeah, so when you tie all those together, it's inescapable what was done. They had to do it very blatantly so that no one could claim, well, you cheated us out of our freedom.
Uh-huh.
Those people lost their freedom because they weren't alert.
And it's all by just a bluff. That was really funny. Not really funny, but hey. Power and greed. Maybe someday mankind will pass that. But we're not there yet, correct?
Nope.
All right, well, I am going to unmute. Now, if there was someone that didn't ask a question because they couldn't figure out how to get in the queue, go ahead and speak up right now or before we say goodnight. Hey, everybody's good. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Rivera. Learned a lot.
Oh, you're entirely welcome.
It's weird how you have to hear this several times so many different ways. And, you know, it really is something that one has to get inside of their self and their soul, because if you believe that there's someone or something that has authority over you, then you're always going to be asking for permission, right?
Yep.
Sort of respect. But when you truly understand that that's not possible, it can't be possible, then your whole mindset changes. Is that how you characterize your walk down this your journey down this path?
Well, the more you learn, the more powerful you become, and the more powerful your thoughts become, because they're all backed up by the truth. You can't get any stronger than backed up by the truth.
Okay, well, good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thanks for coming in out tonight.
Thanks,
good night. Good night. Okay.